Gillette's best blades can save you up to 50% versus the other shave club's $9 per month plan. That's right. Close, comfortable, smooth, and up to 50% off versus the other shave club. Join today at GilletteShaveClub.ca.
It's At The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's At The Letters for Wednesday, March the 9th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm a staff writer here at Sportsnet. Flying solo today as Ben Nicholson-Smith is in Florida working hard, pumping out all that great Blue Jays content for you on Sportsnet.ca. But he will be joining me via phone, so I'll be talking to him in our first segment. And in our second segment today, we're going to talk to Darwin Barney. Blue Jays, utility, middle infielder, plays some second, some third, some short. He's making big league money, Darwin Barney is, making a little over $1 million. He's very, very likely coming north with the team. I'd be pretty shocked if he didn't. And a guy who's going to be an important part of this team. You look at, you know, how important those middle infield depth types can be, especially when your shortstop is a guy who has struggled to put together complete seasons in the past, and especially when Devin Travis is already sitting out with his shoulder injury that's going to hold him out for the first few months of the season. So I talked to Darwin about that and then about his progression as a major leaguer and what he went through last year and all kinds of good stuff. But before we get to that, we're going to be joined by Ben Nicholson-Smith from Florida to just kind of run up and down happenings with your Toronto Blue Jays. We'll get to that after this on At The Letters. It's At The Letters, Sportsnet.ca, iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. Arden Zwelling here at The Letters Central in Toronto at the headquarters. Pleased to be joined by my normal co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith, over the line from Florida where he is covering spring training. Ben, how are things going?
Things are going well. Things are going well for me. It's fun being down here, and things are going pretty well for the Blue Jays, too. They're looking good so far this spring.
You watched some riveting Grapefruit League action today between the Blue Jays and Rays. Jay Happ starting for the Blue Jays. Chris Archer starting for the Rays. Give me a takeaway from that game, something that, you know, fans wouldn't have gotten from the box score, something interesting that that happened that struck you today.
Richard Urania is a shortstop prospect in the Blue Jays system, and he made two really impressive defensive plays today. One was in the hole between third and short. One was down the left field line, diving onto the tarp and really putting his body on the line to make a great play. So those plays definitely left an impression on John Gibbons after the game. He even said that Urania could be the heir apparent to Troy Tulowitzki down the line, obviously talking a few years from now. But I mean, that's pretty high praise for a guy who's just 20 years old.
That's a pretty large title to put on a guy. Hey, you're going to be like the best shortstop in baseball someday. He's 20 years old, out of the Dominican Republic. Joined the Blue Jays at just 17 in a couple of years ago, and you know, since then has worked his way up to high A. I mean, we don't hear a lot about these guys, but you were obviously impressed with what he did defensively. What have you seen from him, you know, otherwise at the plate? I mean, just how does he look? Does he look out of place? What have you seen from Richard Urania?
Well, he's a switch hitter. He hit a ball hard today, and it was scored an error. But I think that with the bat, it's probably going to take a while, and he's probably never going to be Troy Tulowitzki offensively. So few players are, especially up the middle. But I think that even just having someone who can contribute to that extent defensively at this age is pretty impressive. And then if he can build in the course of the next few years offensively, then the Blue Jays will really have something.
Speaking of prospects that you got to see today, you got to see Connor Green throw. I think it was just his second or third outing this spring, but looked like he worked a clean inning. What did you think of him?
He was throwing really hard. I mean, I didn't realize that Connor Green threw this hard until this spring. He's throwing 94 to 98, and it's interesting because he said that until he was promoted to Lansing and got there in his minor league career, he wasn't even throwing that hard. He was throwing more like 93. And then all of a sudden he was throwing 98. So he was actually surprised by it. Obviously a pleasant surprise for a guy who you know, by most definitions, is the Blue Jays' best pitching prospect and someone who seems ticketed for Double A New Hampshire. But I mean, he's really raising expectations, and he's really catching a lot of eyes when it comes to the Blue Jays' big league decision makers.
Another guy who is just 20, but we have, you know, we can just look back to last year and look at Miguel Castro and Roberto Osuna as guys who, you know, impressed quite a bit as 20-year-olds in spring training and all of a sudden found themselves in the majors. It's interesting with Connor Green because he doesn't look, you know, he's such a stringy guy. Like, he's so lanky, and he can really ramp that thing up. I'm sure that, you know, the velocity is going to play, and the next thing for him is just kind of throw strikes, be in the zone. Maybe he could be, you know, an interesting kind of a bullpen piece down the line if you're looking for an impact arm there.
Yeah, you never know what could happen in the course of the season. And if he goes to Double A and impresses, then definitely there would be chatter about calling him up late in the season. But it's interesting, and Shai Davidi has a piece on this up on sportsnet.ca, but there's really a challenge when it comes to Green, who's still just 20 years old. And he's trying to put on weight. I mean, he's going to Chipotle, eating burritos all the time. He's drinking protein shakes, and he's just not putting on weight. He's, like you said, he's a stringy guy. And so far, it's working where he's throwing 98 miles an hour. But as a starting pitcher, I mean, we've seen this with Aaron Sanchez. And as a starting pitcher, usually you want to have a little bit of heft. You don't want to be Jesse Chavez out there who's wilting in the face of a stiff breeze. And so hopefully Connor Green is able to accomplish that. And you think that time would allow that, is, you know, the metabolism tends to slow down a little bit from the time you're 20 years old.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I haven't experienced that. One bit.
Right. Totally foreign concept.
I totally just sympathize with these guys who, you know, just eat nothing but fast food and can't put on weight, you know?
Yeah. Finally, it's got to be. Life is tough. Yeah.
Finally something relatable. So, yeah, you know, who else did you see today? You saw Jay Happ pitch. I mean, you know, he traditionally has had kind of poor springs, and you know, for one reason or another, he's kind of been a bit slow to get the motor running. But what did you see from him today?
Yeah, you know, the point that you made is really in line with what John Gibbons said after the game. He said that Happ looked better than he had in previous springs. The Blue Jays can use those previous springs as reference points for him because they've seen him for a lot of his big league career. But Happ was pretty good today, and I keep coming back to the fact that if Happ can just go through the spring, get his work done, and you're not noticing big, you know, 6-7 run outings allowed or lots of walks, that's probably a good thing. He was pounding the strike zone. He said that was a big key for him today. And that's something that he's been able to do more successfully as his career has gone on, where he's lowered that walk rate and really become someone who can avoid the big inning, in part because he's avoiding those walks.
Yeah, it's really going to be, you know, how much of that kind of Ray Searidge magic dust can he carry over into this year? We had Ray Searidge on the podcast, obviously, and talked to him about some of the adjustments that Jay Happ made. It's going to be interesting to see how that translates over with Pete Walker this year, and whether, you know, like, I don't think anybody can expect Jay Happ to be what he was over the last, you know, 11 starts of 2015, which was like Cy Young stuff. But if he can even just, you know, bring his walks down and be more consistent in the zone, throw hard, useful piece for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think that's what they brought him in to be. He doesn't have to front the rotation by any stretch. Clearly, Marcus Stroman's the guy that people are looking to with all the talk of his upside, and rightfully so when you look at what he can do on a big league mound. But Happ is someone who can fit more at the back of a rotation, along with guys like R.A. Dickey, even Marco Estrada. If he regresses and becomes more of a number three starter, as opposed to the guy who posted a 3.13 ERA last year, then the Blue Jays can live with that because they have the offense that outscored all of baseball by 100-plus runs last year.
Where are we at on Marco? He had the back thing that flared up when he was doing the dragon crunches or whatever that crazy exercise was that he was doing. And, you know, that's been bothering him quite a bit. And it sounded like he kind of threw aside today. I mean, what are you hearing about that?
The Blue Jays say that they're optimistic he can break camp with the team. So that's the status. That's the update at this point. And if you map it out, he still has time to make four starts before opening day. And this isn't a guy that they wanted to overexert during spring training anyway. So if everything goes well, then Estrada would be positioned to make those four starts, break camp with the team, and there are no problems. But because he has been delayed to this point, I think the Blue Jays are in a position where if there is one more setback, if he does need a few days at one point, Then you start getting into territory where it's a lot harder to line up those starts and get his innings up to the point where you're able to break camp with him.
It's interesting because, you know, this thing has kind of carried on certainly longer than I expected it to. I talked to Marco Estrada quite a bit when I was down there, and, you know, we were like walking around when we were talking, and he was fine, and, you know, he wasn't really complaining about it. He didn't seem terribly worried about it. And now, you know, it's this thing is stretching into, we're almost at mid-March here. You know, if there is, you know, a situation where Marco Estrada has to open the year on the disabled list, or, you know, isn't quite done ramping it up, you know, by the end of spring and just needs another week or something, maybe we see a situation where, you know, it's there is room for two of the four starters who are competing for that fifth rotation spot.
Yeah, that's something I've wondered about. And the Blue Jays say that that's not going to be something they have to worry about. So if all goes well for them, they won't have to go down that path. But I think you start to look at that group of four starters where you have Hutchinson, Chavez, Gavin Floyd, and Aaron Sanchez, and they're all pitching reasonably well. They're at least meeting expectations. In Sanchez's case, you could say that he's exceeding expectations, and Floyd too, for that matter, throwing up to 95 miles an hour and logging three innings yesterday without walking anyone. So, you know, you could end up in a scenario where there's an extra spot for whatever reason. And if that's the case, then the Blue Jays would have some more tough decisions to make. And I think even if it is just one spot that they have, that's a decision that John Gibbons described yesterday as the toughest call he's going to have to make in camp.
And then the other kind of the domino effect of this, though, is that say you have to put, Sanchez and Floyd into the starting rotation. Well, that weakens your bullpen because now you've taken Sanchez out of there and you're taking, you know, Floyd out of there. And a lot of people kind of looked at Floyd coming into this camp as a guy who was a reliever for the Indians last year and got up to, you know, 96 and pitched well out of the bullpen. Obviously, he wants to start, and that's what he's done throughout his entire career. But we also haven't seen a full season of starting from him in you know, 4 years. So all of a sudden, you're taking pretty valuable arms out of that bullpen, and you're kind of weakening your bullpen via this domino effect.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that when you look at the Blue Jays rotation, you're not lining up 5 times 220 innings. So you need to have a good bullpen. I guess the one advantage that they can play with relatively early in the season is they have a couple off days. So you don't necessarily have to go all out in terms of bullpen usage in that first couple weeks of the season. But we all know that really you're going to need tons of arms in the course of a 6 month year. And so the Blue Jays don't want to necessarily handicap their chances of having a good bullpen by having a good rotation. But to me, I think that first building block has to be the rotation. You have to start with the starting rotation, see who can be your best starters to get out of the gate with. And then after that, you kind of fit the pieces around that as far as the bullpen and hope that you're able to get enough bullpen innings, even if it's not exactly the best case scenario as far as how you might align things up in the offseason.
That's an interesting point. After the Blue Jays open in Tampa and they play four in Tampa and then they've got an off day and then they come home to play three against the Red Sox and they've got another off day. So they could roll with four for the first kind of 10 games of the season, basically, before they would need that fifth starter on their second road trip of the year. So, yeah, that's interesting. Maybe they do go with four. Maybe that means it's an 8-man bullpen, which is, not something that I'm particularly in favor of, but something that, you know, we've heard the Blue Jays talk about before and you know, talk about the possibility of.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that trade-off that you get into with the bench, and would you rather have an extra outfielder, for example? You could take maybe Ezekiel Carrera and Junior Lake, or you could take Tony Sanchez as a way to bolster your catching depth, or do you take that 8 reliever? I mean, to me, early in the season especially, 8 relievers would be overkill. When you have a well-rested team, you can manage their innings toward the end of spring training. You can make sure that they're ready to hit the ground running on opening day. But still, that doesn't answer the question of how you approach that rotation. And I really think that Estrada's health is going to go a long way toward determining that.
I'm with you on that. 8 would be overkill at the beginning of the season. Let me ask you this, because, you know, I feel like no matter what Drew Hutchison does this spring, he's probably ticketed for the rotation in Buffalo to begin the years, because he has those options and he's still trying to figure himself out. I mean, is there anything Drew Hutchison can do to crack this rotation out of spring?
I don't think so. Yeah, and maybe I'm misreading this, but I don't really think so. I think he's going to Buffalo, and you never know if he were to go out and pitch 5 perfect innings with 12 Ks. I mean, yeah, that'd be an eye-opener, but I think that realistically, Hutchison is lower on that depth chart, and I would I would guess that Floyd and Sanchez are ahead of him on that depth chart for the starter's job. I would even guess that Jesse Chavez is ahead of him. Is that the same sense you get?
I would, yeah. If I was handicapping it, I'd put Floyd and Sanchez as like 1A and 1B kind of at the top of that. Then Chavez a step below, and then Drew Hutchison. And I really do think that's how it's kind of sorting out right now. You know, the thing with Chavez that's interesting is that he's had such great starts to the year in previous seasons. As you know, as a starter, he's come out of the gates really, really well. So maybe you want to capitalize on that early in a season. But he's also a guy who, you know, seems like he would be pretty willing to accept a bullpen role, a long man role. Like, he's a pretty easygoing cat. You know, he's going to be okay going either way. Whereas Aaron Sanchez has made it very clear that he wants to start and that everything he's done this offseason is to start. And Gavin Floyd is another guy who, you know, I think the front office really likes and who, has the most success as a starter of anyone in that group throughout his career, the most pedigree, certainly, and, you know, has a great five-pitch mix that, you know, is probably more of a fit as a starter than as a bullpen guy.
Yeah, exactly. And I keep coming back to the fact that he signed a big league deal, and that's worth keeping in mind as a reflection of how high the Blue Jays are on him. But, you know, when it comes to Chavez, one thing I wonder, and you would probably have some insight into this having written about the Blue Jays high performance team, but I wonder if there's a way to maximize his performance so that there's not that drastic split from the first couple months of the season to the last couple months of the season. And maybe that's something to do with nutrition, or maybe that's something to do with sleeping. Who knows? Acupuncture, flexibility. There are all kinds of different things that major league teams look at now when it comes to maximizing their players. And I think one thing we can safely say is that Chavez really hasn't maximized his pitching know-how and really the stuff that he has in the second half of the season. So maybe that's something the Blue Jays could look to when they're trying to find ways to use this high performance group to actually impact the field.
Yeah, absolutely. That is something they could look at with him. I mean, you know, Chavez has had, you know, there's been a few different things that have happened to him, right? In 2014, that was the year, I mean, he was doing fine in Oakland's rotation and he thought he was going to finish the year in the rotation. That was the year they went out and got Jeff Samardzija and John Lester. And so he just got bumped because, you know, he's not an ace, basically. You know, you're not going to bump Sonny Gray or, you know, either, you know what I mean? So he got bumped for that reason. And in 2015, you know, when I talked to him, he kind of said that, you know, he was trying to make adjustments and that he was trying to learn or work on a slider. And that was kind of messing up his cutter. So there are pitches that move kind of in a similar way and they are kind of similar grips. And he says that, you know, he was just trying to make adjustments to make both those pitches better. He started making himself worse. So he started adjusting like crazy and that had adverse effects. And he said that affected his performance. But I remember when we had Susan Slusser on the podcast, she said, you know, he's a guy who, much like Connor Green, has trouble keeping weight on and he has trouble with the durability of a full season. And maybe that is something, you know, where this high performance department can come into effect and, you know, get him, you know, on a better nutrition plan, on a better, you know, weightlifting plan. You know, a big thing with them is tailoring the plans to each specific individual player. When you think about, you know, why Jose Bautista hasn't played yet, it's because his plan is tailored to him and his plan says he's not going to play for the first X amount of games of spring training. So maybe that's something they could do for him.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is something that they're pretty serious about as an organization. I mean, I think it's telling too that relatively early on in Mark Shapiro's tenure as team president, I mean, we're talking what 4 or 5 months, really less than that. I don't know. It hasn't been a long time that he's been president, and this is something that they've already implemented. So that tells me that this is something that matters to them, and you know, I think that it comes across in your piece that really the Blue Jays are intent on finding ways, even if they're a little bit unconventional, to make sure that their players are getting what they need to deliver results on the field.
I guess he took over at the beginning of November, I guess, was the official time. So that would be 4 months and a week, basically.
You
just think about, and you know this from being down there, like how many new bodies there are just around in terms of not even, you know, front office guys, you know, trainers. The Blue Jays didn't have a physical therapist on staff until this year. And now they have Nicky Hoffman, who worked with Marcus Stroman at Duke over the last year and was working out at Duke. And they hired her on to be the team's first physical therapist. Like, it's kind of crazy to think that the team didn't have that. And you have all these new people in sports psych, sports medicine, they have the people just to talk to you about mental health. Like employees were just, that's all they do. And they, you know, much like, you know, if you pulled your calf or your lat or whatever, and you would go and talk to one of the team doctors about that. If you're, you know, feeling mentally unright, you can go and talk to one of those people about it. And this is totally new. So yeah, Mark Shapiro is totally, you think about, you know, people quibble about the Blue Jays spending money. Like he spent a lot of money on just pure personnel from a front office standpoint and this high performance standpoint as well.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, you mentioned Nikki Huffman, and Devin Travis was saying just a couple of days ago that she is, and I quote Travis here, a freaking genius. So that's the kind of impact that it can have if you add the right person to a front office, to a training staff. And we'll see when Travis returns, we'll see if he returns, but you know, he's making progress, he's optimistic, and a huge part of that comes from the work that he's been able to do with the Blue Jays staff.
Yeah, I know Nikki pretty well just from doing all the Stroman reporting that I've done. Anybody who's read my Stroman stuff over the last year or so has definitely seen her name pop up in the copy here and there. And she has a truly, and I spoke to Angus Mugford, who's the director of high performance with the Blue Jays, about this. Like she has a truly, it is kind of like an ingenious way of getting through to players. Like she's really good at, Like she's very versatile in terms of reading players' personalities and presenting information to them in a way that makes them, you know, makes them take ownership of it. Basically, it's not just, all right, do, you know, 10 squats at this. It's here's why you're doing it, and here's why you want to do it. And then the player is saying, oh man, like I really want to, you know, I'm taking ownership of this now. I really want to do this. You know, Angus Mugford talked to me a lot about how communication and just clarity with players and telling players why they're doing these things and how this is going to make them better and how this is going to help them achieve their goals is like really a focus of that entire department. And it's, you know, it's truly what they're doing isn't, you know, it's other teams aren't doing this stuff. Like the Cleveland Indians, where Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins obviously came from, they were kind of at the forefront of sports psych in baseball. And they were some of the first baseball teams to hire sports psychologists and start doing stuff like this. But they never took it to like this level where you have, you know, a whole department and one guy, Angus Mugford, who thinks all day about, you know, tailoring plans for specific players and making them better and giving them every last resource off the field in terms of nutrition and working out and mental health and this and that, that can help them get the best results on the field.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the communication, and I think that's something that the Blue Jays are trying very hard to do. And I was talking to an agent today before the game who represents a Blue Jays player, fringe guy, probably not going to make the team. And this agent said, Atkins told him, hey, do you want me to talk to your guy again? Do you want me to let him know? Do you want me to make sure that he knows where he's at and that he has all his questions answered? This is not someone who's going to go and play 150 games for the Blue Jays. This is more of a depth signing. And so that's the kind of approach that the Blue Jays are trying to take. Now, it doesn't necessarily matter if you get the wrong guys. You have to pick the right players in the first place. Then you communicate with them and let them know their role, let them know what you expect from them. But it's interesting to see, and as we kind of get to know how this new Blue Jays front office is operating, really on a week-by-week basis as they go through spring training, more information tends to rise to the surface a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would point to how they handled, you know, the Michael Saunders situation during, you know, the talks with Cincinnati and L.A. and the whole, you know, Jay Bruce imbroglio. And, you know, Michael Saunders, you know, came out and said, hey, look, like Ross Atkins was very forward with me and came out and, you know, talked to me and, you know, was very honest and reassured me. John Gibbons did the same thing. Like that communication, that goes a long way, where players feel like they aren't just commodities and, you know, they aren't just, you know, pieces on a chessboard. And, you know, Jose Bautista had kind of similar comments where, you know, he came out and in his introductory press conference said, you know, yeah, this is my number. I'm not going to negotiate this and that. Like took a very hard stance against the front office. And then, like, you know, a minute later, it was like, I have nothing but praise for everything that they've done in terms of player development and, you know, helping guys fulfill, you know, their best abilities.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. So I think that Bautista, in a way, is a really interesting test case for this front office, because even before this high-performance stuff came into vogue, Bautista is a guy who took really close care of himself, an insane amount of attention to detail, and really prioritize his fitness in a way you don't necessarily see from every player. So in that sense, he kind of does align with this front office.
Well, yeah, and you know, guys were going outside the organization to do that. Like Jose had his own kind of high performance people they dealt with. The fact that Marcus Stroman went outside the organization to rehab last year, and you know, obviously he wanted to go back to Duke and get his degree. And there is a doctor there who has consulted with the Blue Jays before, but you know, ideally you'd like to have a situation in Dunedin or in wherever you end up where players want to be rehabbing there and want to be living there and want to be working with your people and want to be, you know, using your consultants and your knowledge and expertise and all that instead of having to go outside the organization for stuff like this.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why the actual facility in Dunedin is something that they need to improve, is because if you have players working out at different places, if the facility is anything less than state of the art, then you, in a sense, you disincentivize players from actually wanting to spend time there, work out there, and improve themselves at their craft. So really, it's something that the Blue Jays are going to have to look at. And some of this high performance discussion is really just the beginning of where this is going to go under Mark Shapiro and the Blue Jays.
Let's leave it on this because I know that the people want to know. Jose Bautista has been taken at bats left-handed at BP. You had a story on sportsnet.ca where you actually talked to Mr. Bautista about what was going on with that. What kind of insight can you give us into the new switch hitter, Jose Bautista?
I just thought it was a fun story. I think it's pretty cool. It's fun watching him hit left-handed. He's pretty good at it. He hits a few home runs. And so I suspected, knowing that Bautista is someone who takes very, very good care of himself, that there was a purpose behind it. And I asked him and he said, yeah, the purpose is that he wants to balance out his body, balance out his muscles, specifically his abs, his hips. He wants to make sure that there's nothing out of alignment, because if he ends up being much stronger on one side than the other, then there's a chance that he would end up using muscles differently and even potentially risking injury. So this is a way for him to balance things out. And it sounds like he has a lot of fun with it. I mean, people think of Bautista as being very, very serious, which he is, and he wants to perform to the best of his abilities, which are considerable. But I think he really has a lot of fun hitting left-handed, and it's a way for him to relax and get back to having a bit of fun with the game.
Absolutely. Very goofy guy behind closed doors with his teammates. You get a glimpse of it in the clubhouse, although even when there's media in there, he still remains very guarded. But I do think there is also it also scratches an itch for Jose Bautista, where he kind of, you know, he's a proud guy and he likes to show off, so I'm sure he doesn't mind going out in BP and hitting a few over the fence from the wrong side.
Oh yeah, I don't think any player would mind showing off their ability. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, Chris Colabello said that he's tried it, and you know, it's really so much tougher than it looks, like so many things these guys do. But Colabello gave it a shot when a few of the players were messing around with it last year, Bautista included, and he was like, no, this is not for me. I'm sticking to my right swing. And so I don't think we're going to see Colabello or Bautista for that matter. I mean, he made it very clear it's not something he would ever try in a game, but it is a conditioning tool for him as he tries to balance out his body.
Yeah, you know, in baseball, I mean, once people see something working for one guy, everyone else wants to do it. So it'll be interesting if we're going to see half the team, you know, taking BP from the wrong side now to balance out their bodies. Ben, man, thank you. Appreciate this.
My pleasure. Happy to do it.
Yeah. When are we going to see you? Next week?
Yeah, I'll be back next week. So that'll be good. We'll be back to normal next week. And in the meantime, I'm looking forward to this Darwin Barney interview.
Yeah, it's true. We did talk to Darwin Barney. We'll begin to that after this. Thank you, Ben, for coming along. We'll be right back on At the Letters.
But he did.
Darwin Barney puts a charge in it to left field, and that ball is gone. Darwin Barney with a home run. His second hit of the night. He's had a nice doubleheader here today.
It continues on At the Letters. Very pleased to be joined today by Blue Jays utility infielder Darwin Barney from Florida. Darwin, how are things?
Hey, doing well.
Awesome. So today you had the unenviable task of taking your first at bat against Chris Archer. I can't imagine that you've seen Archer much in your career, but what's it like standing in against a guy who throws 95 with a slider like he has?
Well, I came up with a guy like him. We just traded when we were with the Cubs together, but, you know, I feel like everybody's going 9-to-5 these days, so he's just a little different. Stuff kind of jumps out of his hand a little bit. You know, his slider is kind of deadly, so it's tough.
You, you've gone off to a pretty good start this spring. You had hits in 6 of your first 7 at-bats. What do you attribute that early success to?
You know, just kind of getting into work, kind of picking guys' brains here. Everybody here kind of works together on our offensive stuff, and, you know, trying to get to the slot and like that. So it's just, you know, maybe I got a little hot too early. It's only downhill from here, unfortunately, but, you know, it's just kind of the culture here.
Hopefully it's not downhill from here. I mean, your locker there in Dunedin is right in kind of the middle of quite a bit of activity with, you know, Troy Tulowitzki's there, Josh Donaldson, Kevin Pillar, and it seems like you guys are constantly having these little powwows and, you know, talking about hitting and technique. What have those conversations been like for you?
That's something that's unique with this club from the other clubs I've been on. You know, guys aren't afraid to share their input and work with each other sometimes. The stuff that you take the most from somebody is from a player rather than a coach. So, you know, it's not weird to see us on a daily basis in a circle, kind of talk about it, kind of help each other out. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been working.
I know you guys have been logging some pretty long batting practice sessions as well, you know, in the cages with you know, Troy Tulowitzki's talked a lot about how he's, you know, just trying to be a part of the team and give tips and advice and things like that. What are those kind of sessions in the cages been like? What's the banter like in the cages?
You know, like I said, it's different here. You know, at the end of every day, like spring training, guys aren't a rush to get home. Okay, they're, you know, going out there, working together, spending another hour or two out in the cage, talking, you know, just doing things that you don't see on a normal big league club. So, you know, it's something that's special, and that's a reason that are collectively a good offensive club.
You know, you've won a gold glove in your career, so you know a thing or two about defense up the middle, but, you know, I'm curious to hear what it's been like for you to watch a guy like Troy Tulowitzki, you know, play shortstop up close.
You know, he's extremely talented. I've seen him, you know, for years now, baby. It's something different watching a guy like him, the way he goes about his work. You know, he's accomplished so much in the game, continues to try and get better. So guys like that are the kind of guys that think other guys around them better, and that's kind of what Troy does.
And then, you know, you've also got Ryan Goins, you know, playing at second base there, and I'm sure you guys have been, you know, taking a lot of grounders next to each other throughout spring. I mean, he's a guy maybe, you know, certainly in Toronto it's appreciated, but maybe across the league doesn't get the appreciation for his defense that he deserves. What's it been like watching him?
Yeah, I think, you know, a guy like him, I think he's going to get that, you know, take a little bit of time to get, you know, the respect across the league at this level. You know, there's so many good players, but it's definitely a guy that you know, the longer he plays, the more and more people are going to understand how good it is defensively. I think this team can really hit. And, you know, I think what we really want to hang our hat on is the way that we play defense and help our pitchers out, and I think that's going to make our team better.
If I can take you back to last year, I mean, can you describe what it's like to, you know, spend most of your season at AAA and then think your year is over, and then suddenly you kind of find yourself, you know, in September basically playing every day for a team that's in the thick of the pennant race?
Yeah, you know, it was a little tough. You know, going into LA, it's, you know, you're a part of that team, and unfortunately a couple trades happen and kind of get pushed off. You know, it was a learning experience for me. I had the opportunity to make some adjustments and try to become a better player all around. You know, I was lucky to get that call from Toronto and come here and just continue to learn from those guys. I feel like it's only made me better. So, you know, it was definitely night and day last year getting that call, getting that trade, having the opportunity to get that visited, you know, trying out the sequence.
Is it really a situation where you go from basically, I mean, you know, being on your couch to suddenly having to, you know, compete at the highest level?
Yeah, I mean, I flew home really early that day and got the call, and I had to leave that night. So as hard as it was on me, it was probably a little harder on my wife and kids, who were excited to have dad home, and you know, he's up and gone. So, you know, it was hard on the family, but, you know, in the end, that's kind of the job we have, and kind of rolled the punches. So That was blessed with that.
When you know, when you look at last year for you, and you mentioned having to make adjustments, and I'm sure it was an adjustment going from being, you know, an everyday major leaguer for 4 years to almost having to try to prove yourself again at Triple A. I mean, what are those adjustments that you talked about making?
Well, you know, I kind of sat down and, you know, it's almost my dad that told me, you know, you're going to have to change something if you want to continue to play this game. So, you know, I started looking at the games on my offensive game and, you know, made those adjustments, started picking it up down there to play. You know, when I came here, it's kind of applying that to the philosophy here. It really kind of opened up, you know, my abilities on the offensive side. I feel like I a little bit on that side of the game. Now, obviously, I'm going to hang my hat on my defense every day, and that's what I'm here for, is to, you know, go out there and someone that get the job done. But, you know, if I come out and make a difference on the offensive side, it's only going to help my career and help this team. So, you know, that was a big part of my adjustment process.
Did you feel like you lost something offensively at some point during your career? Because, you know, we can remember back to when you first came up to the big leagues. I mean, you were a, you know, you hit 276 as a 25-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I came in riding confidence. You know, you don't get to the big leagues unless you hit your way there. You know, I was fortunate enough to do that in the minor league before. You know, but as time goes on, you get exposed and you have adjustments. And, you know, I was such a handy hitter. It was hard to handle some of the sinkers and off-speed stuff. And they just started exposing me to the highest level of baseball in the world. And, got to be able to make adjustments. Like I said, see a guy like Troy, who wants to get better, they willing to make adjustments. You know, it's just not a game. It keeps changing, and you got to change with it.
As you went into the offseason after last year, obviously you couldn't join the Blue Jays for the playoffs, and when you went into the offseason, did you think the Blue Jays wanted to bring you back at that point?
You know, that was something that was in the back of my mind. I enjoyed my time. I liked the guys. You know, I really wanted to continue to work on the stuff that Jacoby and I were working on offensively. And, you know, I was happy to get that opportunity and make that choice. So, you know, it was definitely, they were my top choices from the beginning.
And just finally, you know, I've heard you talk a lot about having to earn everything in this game, you know, no matter who you are. And, you know, I think your career is a good example of that. Do you feel like this season you really have a bit more of an opportunity to earn that keep, just considering you do have, you know, the guaranteed contract and a pretty clear opportunity to, you know, go north with this team at the end of spring?
You know, I mean, baseball doesn't owe anybody anything. You know, try and go out every day and enjoy it. You know, I think this game will break you down, you know, mentally. And so, you know, I'm going to look at the opportunity as a chance to help the team rather than, you know, with anything personally. So I think that's kind of the thing throughout the clubhouse. It creates a good culture.
Hey, well, Darwin, we thank you for joining us. You know, wish you the best luck with the rest of spring, and hopefully the next starter you get isn't throwing a slider like Archer's. Our thanks to Darwin Barney for joining us over the phone from Florida. I do think that the fact that he went 0-for-3 today may have contributed to his enthusiasm to be talking to me today about other struggles that he's gone through in his career. I certainly wouldn't be too happy about that, but it was still pretty insightful stuff from Darwin, and good to hear from him. You know, good to hear from a guy in the Blue Jays who maybe doesn't get covered enough, really, when you think about the role he's going to play on this team. My thanks is also to Ben Nixon-Smith for calling in from Florida. Always valuable insight from Ben. He'll be back in Toronto. I think it's in this weekend, so he'll be back. We should be able to hopefully get back onto like the Tuesday schedule with these At the Letters podcasts, because we've been coming out on Wednesdays and Thursdays. We're recording in cars and you know, crappy Florida press boxes and things like this. Hopefully we can get back on that every Tuesday grind, so you know when the stuff is coming out and when it's going to be in your iTunes. Speaking of iTunes, if you're listening to this on iTunes, if you could you know, give us a star rating. Personally, I would go with the 5, but you know, I'll leave that up to you. And if you could leave a little review as well, that'd be great. That stuff helps somehow. I don't know, but our producer Sam McKee's been very very excited with where we are in on the lists. And where we are on the, I don't know, the standings, the charts, however all that stuff works. So, you know, hey, make Sam happy, because we like making Sam happy. My thanks to Sam for producing this and for putting up with us. You think about how inconsistent and how crazy it's been to get this podcast into your ears. Imagine being the producer and having to herd the stray cats that are me and Ben into the studio to put these things out. So it's a harder job than you would imagine. Keep reading sportsnet.ca. You would have heard me and Ben talk a lot about the Blue Jays' new high performance department. I'm going to have a piece out. Should be up Thursday morning, depending on how hard I write tonight. And that'll, you know, that's all about that high performance department. I sat down with Angus Mugford, who's the director of it, and talked to him for a good long while. And it's a pretty cool piece. It's some cool insight into what the Blue Jays are doing. And it's super different. And the Blue Jays are kind of at the forefront of this all of a sudden after, you know, lagging behind like 29 other teams. All of a sudden, the Blue Jays are at the forefront of this stuff. A lot of stuff that's, you know, a lot of other sports teams have had success with. I should say teams in other sports have had success with. And now the Blue Jays are applying it to baseball. It's pretty cool and pretty exciting stuff. So I would encourage you to read that. I encourage you to keep reading Ben Nicholson Smith's reportage from Florida and that good stuff. And hey, keep listening to At The Letters, because we do this stuff for you. You can get me on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. Ben's at B Nicholson Smith. Sam is at Sam A McKee, I think, without having it in front of me. Nailed it, as always. That's why they pay me the big bucks. So hey, thanks for coming along. We'll talk to you next time. This has been At The Letters.